This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 56 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max.
Hi, David. You know, I'll be honest with you. I think we've got so many stories to talk about this episode that we may have a tough time fitting them in. So maybe we should kind of get started right away.
So our topics for this episode are, when is an aircraft not an aircraft? Evidently, the FAA is confused. Agribusiness is big business for drones. A lesson in how not to get a crop duster's attention. FAA centers of excellence now that the test centers are up. POTUS on drones. And a lot more stories and a video of the week. So we better get started. And our first story comes this week from Forbes.com. FAA thinks 2-pound drones are aircraft, but 1,100-pound manned flying craft, they're not so sure about. This is from one of my favorite catalogs, even though I can never afford anything in it. It's from, and I can never pronounce this, Hamaker Schlemmer, which has a flying hovercraft for $190,000.
The author of this piece saw this thing, and they take a look at it, and they see that it has integrated wings. It has a 130-horsepower gasoline engine that drives a 60-inch propeller, and this thing called the 19XRW Hoverwing. It's manufactured by Universal Hovercraft. It can fly up to 70 miles an hour and over obstacles as tall as 20 feet. So it kind of seems like it's an airplane. But when the author asked the FAA if this would fall under their purview, their regulations, they kind of didn't really have an answer, did they?
No. In fact, they replied that they haven't made any determinations because they've not received any applications for certification, which is okay. I don't know if many people have requested their DJI Phantom be certified, but they're perfectly willing to discuss this. In a way, Max, I gotta side with the FAA. I don't know that any vehicle that's what they call WIG or wing in ground effect is really an airplane. The Russians really created this whole product, and they had a lot of large vehicles that never got very high. So it's a hovercraft sort of, and it can skip around, but it's not really capable of sustained flight. And it never really leaves what they call ground effect, which is the airflow of the wing bouncing off of the ground and causing it to act a little bit like a hovercraft, only it moves faster than when a hovercraft. And a hovercraft keeps the air in a envelope. So to be more precise, so I can understand why, but I mean, it does point out the FAA sometimes can be inconsistent.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what they're trying to get at here is that does the FAA define aircraft in different ways at different times for different purposes, depending on what they're trying to accomplish? But yeah, I think I agree with you, David, that it doesn't make a real strong argument that the FAA is being kind of inconsistent.
Our next one was from the Star Democrat in Easton, Maryland, and it's commercial drone dealers take farming to new heights.
Yeah, this was an event that was put on by the University of Maryland Extension and Y Research Center. And, you know, they really do understand that technology plays a key role in what we call precision agriculture. So what they did is they brought together a lot of local farmers, some agricultural educators, representatives from farming technology companies, and not surprisingly, UAVs were a prominent part of the event.
Yeah, we keep talking about agribusiness, and it's, I don't know, the ultimate market. I think it's going to be the where everything else sort of filters out. A Virginia-based consulting company, Telus Agronomics, demonstrated their AgriEye drone, a quadcopter for agronomists. Wow. That features autonomous flight, live video feed, and aerial mapping, as well as, I like this, an RC simulator for pre-flight training.
This is an interesting market, the agriculture market, because, and this is not a dig, but a lot of farmers, a lot of people who are in, who are part of the agriculture industry are not technically savvy when it comes to unmanned aerial vehicles. So Telus Agronomics understands that they need to, you know, kind of help folks along. Now, they say that they can teach farmers with no previous experience to fly their system in a day. Now, it's an $8,000 system. And some of the comments from some of the farmers from the event were kind of interesting. I think they generally like the idea of using quadcopters, drones, things like this as part of their business. And there's not a lot of margin in that business. And so they pinch pennies. And an $8,000 system is kind of a big investment for them. And a lot of them are just not quite sure yet that they're ready to take that kind of a jump. Another comment that came out, actually several comments came out relating to maybe a preference to hire some service provider that might bring their own flying machine with them rather than invest themselves in the device itself. So it's interesting, and these are kind of the birth pangs, if you will, of precision agriculture in using drones in that business. So we'll certainly see a lot more about that as we go down the road here as the industry develops.
All right, let's move on, Max, to probably not the best way to get someone away from your property. And this was from agaviation.org. The National Agriculture Aviation Association reports that an ag helicopter was buzzed by a fixed-wing UAV that caused the pilot some distress.
And I think that's reasonable. If you're flying your ag helicopter and you notice some little quadcopter or something buzzing you, that's not going to be a pleasant experience.
Right, because let's face it, crop dusting in any form, via helicopter or fixed wing, you're not flying that far off the ground, and you're flying pretty much in a very unique environment. There's a lot of things to miss, like telephone poles, trees, etc.
Right, you don't need distractions for sure.
However, when is a UAV not a UAV? Well, when the UAV is an extra 300 aerobatic RC airplane, and the pilot admits to exceeding 400 feet with it. So anybody knows what an extra is. An extra is an extra 300 is a aircraft that they use for aerobatic competitions, as well as your aerobatic performer. It's a mid-wing, high engines, and evidently, he decided he didn't really want the crop dusting helicopter near him, so let's just fly the extras a little close and maybe he'll go away. Well, what happened was, unlike a fixed wing airplane, a helicopter you can land immediately and walk over to the pilot and say, "What the hell are you doing?" Which is precisely what happened here, and then the pilot reported the RC pilot to the local law enforcement. So enough said, but more to the point, it's interesting to note that instead of calling it an RC airplane, it sounded much better as a UAV.
Yeah, and this pilot is in trouble. The as you mentioned, the FAA FISDO was notified. That's the Flight Standards District Office. And they called local police, and it looks like they're going to prosecute this, the owner of this, quote, UAV.
Well, let's go broader, and this was from Politico. We don't normally talk politics on this show other than the FAA, but evidently our president, Barack Obama, has issued an executive order on drone privacy.
Actually, what he did was he announced that he would be signing an executive order, and under this order, it would place the NTIA, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, in charge of developing some kind of a voluntary best practices privacy for unmanned aerial vehicles, but he hasn't actually signed it yet.
So I wonder if it's going to just evaporate. But it's interesting that we now have another regulatory agency directly involved with UAVs. Sometimes I wonder if they just make this stuff up. I didn't know we had a National Telecommunications and Information Administration. It sounds like something out of George Orwell's 1984.
Apparently, it's an organization that, or an agency that advises the president on kind of related issues. Some are wondering if this is sort of a snub against the FAA. Why don't they just let the FAA handle this? But, you know, I don't see it that way, David. I don't think the FAA is really constituted to deal with privacy issues. I think that's sort of outside of their mandate or outside of their scope. And I'm not sure I'd really want the FAA to develop privacy regulations. I'm not sure who that should be. Maybe it's the NTIA. Maybe it should be someone else. But, you know, they have in the past, this agency, which is actually part of the Commerce Department, they have developed industry codes of conduct for things like mobile apps. And they're now looking at codes of conduct for privacy relating to facial recognition technology. So, you know, I think it kind of fits. I don't see this as a snub to the FAA. I think it's a good division of labor, really. It's another issue that needs a lot of attention, privacy is. And so, yeah, let's have somebody else focus on that. I think that's fine.
I think I agree. I mean, it really doesn't fall into the purveyance of the FCC, which is the Federal Communications Commission. So, congratulations, NTIA. Welcome to coming out into the daylight. But we'll see what happens. It's another long-term story, and you never know.
Yeah.
It might never get signed, and we might not have to worry about it ever again. So,
one final note on that. I think it's worth mentioning that if the executive order is signed and the NTIA goes ahead with this, that these guidelines would not apply to government use of UAVs.
If they're regulated about privacy issues, it does take the whole spy aspect of drones out of the question, huh?
Sure does.
This is a really big drinking game episode, this, folks. So hopefully you got your FAA shot glasses and are continuing along. And this was from FAA.gov. FAA solicits Center of Excellence for UAS applications. Who writes these headlines? Don't they know they're hard to say? So the FAA released a solicitation for a new FAA Center of Excellence for Unmanned Aircraft Systems. A COE was mandated by Congress under the Consolidation Appropriations Act of 2014.
So this COE, this Center of Excellence, says, according to the FAA, that they will be tasked with identifying current and future issues critical to safe integration of UAS into the nation's airspace. And then they list out some specific areas that this Center of Excellence, when it comes together, will study. We see detect and avoid technology, control and communications, low altitude operations safety, also compatibility with air traffic control operations, and also training and certification of UAS pilots and other crew members.
So the deadline for submission of proposals is September 15th. Not a lot of time. And the COE is expected to be a minimum of $500,000 a year. You think we could be a COE, Max? I mean, $500,000 split equally?
Yeah, that funding would come from the FAA. They say that's the minimum they're going to fund this this level. But and this is directed towards sort of educational institutions, universities, and so forth. And they will be required to match the federal grants dollar for dollar from non-federal sources. So the FAA is funding half of this, it looks like.
And it does sound like we have all of these test centers. Well, what do they need to test? Well, this is the COE, and that's what's, they're going to create the scenarios in a way for the test centers to test. So good for the FAA. We'll see what happens after September 15th, how many offers they get for this. And we'll follow this one along too. Okay, the next one's just, we got this one from our friend Max Trescott, who is one of our co-hosts on Airplane Geeks. I have to agree with him. This is just bizarre. We've talked about Bezos and at the end of last year in 2013, how he changed the world by saying Amazon was going to deliver everything by drones. Well, they can't get the permission to test in the United States. So where are they going, Max?
They're going to India to test the Amazon Prime Air concept, specifically in Mumbai and Bangalore, and pretty soon, possibly as soon as later this year. So, yeah, why India? Well, there's a couple of reasons, but one of the big ones is reportedly because commercial use of drones in India does not need a permit. They don't have the, at least at this time, the restrictive regulations that Amazon would encounter, certainly in the United States and especially elsewhere. But there's some other reasons for them to pick this location. Amazon has warehouses in Mumbai and Bangalore. There's a big market there. You've got a lot of people in a kind of condensed area. And if you're talking about package delivery by drone, there you go. There's your market. There's your opportunity. So this is what reportedly Amazon is going to do. And it is kind of reportedly, David. Amazon hasn't commented on this themselves.
It's an interesting place to implement this because anybody who deals with India knows that Mumbai and Bangalore are not what I would call conducive to truck traffic and shipping traffic. And roads are cluttered with bicycles, cars, trucks, etc. And how do you get a package to someplace quicker? You go above the fray. So it's an interesting environment in which to test it. And it's also a really dense area. It's going to be an interesting way to fly a UAV through all of that space, you know. And basically, if you want to believe Prime Air, it's going to be autonomous. It's not going to have someone flying it first person view. Program it, take off, and fly it to your front doorstep.
Now, we also should mention that the report, the original report, comes from the Economic Times. Their sources are unnamed, so this isn't a well-corroborated story at this point, but it seems to fit with what we've seen Amazon do in terms of moving ahead with this idea. So hopefully we'll find out soon if this is in fact true and this is where Amazon is going to take the next steps.
Our next story is one of the ones where I get to go, yay, we get to talk about military UAVs. It's been a long time since we've actually talked about a military drone.
Right.
And we're back to the good old X-47B. Our friend Stephen Trimble got the privilege of going out to the Theodore Roosevelt and got to watch the X-47B, which was one of the first aircraft to take off and land on an aircraft carrier, actually work on the aircraft carrier with manned aircraft, in this case an F-18E Super Hornet, that they were flying patterns together because anybody who knows anything about carrier aviation is it's one giant circle. You break over the carrier, you put yourself into a turn until you hit the deck about a minute or so later. Well, in that pattern, you have multiple aircraft. Well, if we're going to integrate UAVs into that aircraft, they have to be able to fly in between manned aircraft or other unmanned aircraft. So this was the first time that we were actually working in a military pattern over the carrier break, and the X-47 seemed to do really well.
Yeah, and the X-47 is this isn't the you know, the final aircraft that the Navy's looking for, right, David? This is I don't know if it's a how you'd characterize it, but it's to prove the concepts, to do the sort of the initial study and data collection. And what the Navy wants in the end is something called UCLASS, the Unmanned Carrier Launched Surveillance and Strike Aircraft. But they haven't really specced that out yet.
No, actually, it's interesting. They came out with an RFP light and sent it out to Northrop Grumman, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, and General Atomics, who makes the Predator and Reaper. And basically came up with a sort of an RFP, and they've been working with those four companies with their suggestions and such to finalize the RFP to move forward. So the X-47B is just that. It's an X aircraft, which is an experimental aircraft. And And surprisingly, the Navy's got their bang for their buck on this one, because considering this time last year, we were talking about them retiring them after the two aircraft that were created, because they had completed their mission. They had taken off and landed on the aircraft carrier. But they were so successful at that, the Navy went, well, you know what? Maybe we can get more out of them and use them instead of building a follow-on aircraft, grow them. And they've sort of been maturing over time. So it's definitely quite an accomplishment for Northrop Grumman, who created the X-47. And we'll see what happens with UCAS. I mean, there's a lot of people who are saying that, you know, the Pentagon is dumbing down the aircraft over time, and we're going to get not something that really we want. So the RFP is supposed to come out in the fall. So we'll see what the formal RFP does, and then who's going to follow up on it.
All right. And moving back to the commercial world, we have an article in the Sun Sentinel. This is titled "Drone Manufacturer Grows Amid Uncertain Market." And this is the question that a lot of would-be entrepreneurs have these days, is you look out and you see the potential, the opportunity for business in an uncertain environment. We don't have the regulations in the U.S. yet, and in many other places. So this is a story about a company called DSLR Pros from Oakland Park, California. And they manufacture and sell drones and equipment for professional unmanned aerial filmmaking. Now, it's interesting, this company started only in 2012, but already they have annual revenue of $10 million, and they're not selling commercially, they say. They're selling mostly to fire departments and farmers for agricultural purposes. So this is kind of a case that you can run a business, at least so far, even when we don't really have the final regulations in place that will really allow this to blossom.
And they aim to become the largest U.S. drone manufacturer. It's also interesting that it's DSLR Pros, which if you read that, you'd think it was Nikons and Canons and pro photography. There's nothing in their title that says anything about UAVs. We have a lot of people working around the system. Not that I'm saying they are, but that's one of those funny things that they're doing. And they're also developing drone training DVDs.
Yeah, they also recognize that their customers, potential customers, need that. There's a need for some training in terms of how you fly these things. Certainly when the FAA issues its regulations, that training will be a big part of that. I mean, we know that's coming. But in the meantime, if small UAVs are going to be used by people, there needs to be some training. And they understand that. They're producing that as part of their business.
So we got another video from YouTube, and this was from British Columbia. Video shows drone buzzing Vancouver apartment. Apartment building resident observed some kind of drone flying outside of the building for an estimated 30 minutes, moving from apartment to apartment, then hovered feet from his window.
That's not what you want to see, right? I mean, there's another privacy issue.
Especially when they're receiving 10 complaints, or the Vancouver Police Department received 10 complaints about drones since May. I think we have our first peeping Tom.
Somebody, yeah, or 10 of them anyway. I'm not sure. We don't know. And that's the thing, is that so far nobody's been charged. There's been no way to figure out who's doing this. As I recall from watching the video, it was shot at night. I couldn't even really identify the drone, although because it's got red and green lights on it, and it probably had a camera on it, it was probably, you know, yet another phantom.
And to dovetail off of that, it was going to come sooner or later. The paparazzi have gotten a hold of UAVs, and they've decided that the best way to spy on somebody like Miley Cyrus is to fly a drone over her home.
The Paparazzi Reform Initiative is an organization that's trying to do something about the paparazzi, not solely using drones, but invading the privacy of celebrities. And using drones is obviously very attractive to people who want to
spy on people.
So spy on people, right. So there is proposed legislation pending that would, quote, prohibit the use of aerial drones to collect video, photos, and audio from celebrities and others in a way that violates their privacy rights.
And it was so nice of them to put in the "and others," you know, because
others.
The rest of us mere mortals also evidently get the privilege of having privacy. So I'd like to thank California for thinking of us little people.
Why? You don't need more rules, more legislation that's specifically directed to drones. The existing privacy legislation should cover any technology. In other words, it should be illegal to conduct certain or activities that have a certain effect, and whether some new technology like drones comes along that lets you do that in a new way shouldn't matter. It shouldn't require a change to the law. But politicians like to spike out specific cases, and so the more we see paparazzi behaving this way, the more we see folks in Vancouver look out their windows to observe that they're being spied on. The more of these things that happen, the more we're going to see legislation that may not be very good in the long run. But, politicians have to react to people's concerns. So I think that's an ongoing problem.
Well, we're rapidly running out of time, but we definitely need to touch base with our listener feedback. The first one was from Braden. I'm loving the podcast, guys. I think what you are doing by spreading information and encouraging education is really important for the industry right now, and you will be incredibly important as UAVs get more attention and use in the general public. Your episode with Parker really encouraged me to do a lot more research and planning before every flight. We forwarded it over to Parker, Braden's email, and Parker responded definitely that if he's gotten one person to fly smart, then he was very happy about that. And Braden also sent us a couple of other stories.
Yeah, what Braden did is he created a video of the Satsop nuclear reactor that he did with his drone. Now, this is a nuclear power plant in Washington State that was never completed, never commissioned, never began operation. So it's not like he's flying over an operating nuclear power plant, which wouldn't be received too well. And he's got a video of that. It's an awesome video, very dramatic. He even got a write-up on Mashable.com. And so we'll put links. I think we should make this the video of the week because it's an amazing video. He's got some great background music to go with it. So Braden did a great job with that. And we appreciate him sending along the link to his video.
Congratulations on flying safe. We liked hearing that. And another one was from Mark. Just caught your podcast number 54. You and David talked about Missy Cummings and hoped that she'd be interested in being a guest on the show. The name rang a bell to me. She was one of the people who testified before Congress back in last January. And he sent in a clip of that testimony on tech privacy.
Yeah, Dr. Cummings talks about some interesting subjects. One is that we have a problem in that the government, the people who are making these decisions concerning UAVs, don't have the background, the training, the education. The people who do tend not to go into government, but go into private companies. So there's sort of this lack of technological literacy in the U.S. government. She also had something to say about the ease with which devices that use GPS, not just unmanned aerial vehicles, but also commercial aircraft and other things, how easily they can be spoofed. And she also talks a little bit about privacy concerns. It's not just a drone issue. So we'll put a link in the show notes to this. It's a C-SPAN video of her testimony. So I want to thank Mark for sending that along.
And last, we got another one from Tim. ADS-B for UAV pilots for $3. A low-power, low-altitude ADS-B. For our listeners, ADS-B is a way of what we call next-gen on Airplane Geeks, which is a transponder or automatic dependent surveillance broadcast, which basically, when you fly a UAV with an ADS-B, it sends a signal to GPS satellites and the local air traffic controllers that there is something flying there, and it's supposed to automate the U.S. airspace in a way, which is what NextGen is supposed to do.
And what Tim's article points out is that, you know, how do you do the same kind of thing with UAVs? And he mentions that the Flight Radar 24 app, there's a free version and a paid version. It's only $3. It gives you a graphical display of aircraft in the area. The paid version shows altitude and course. And this is something that UAV pilots and spotter and their spotters can use in order to see what commercial aircraft are in the area. And Tim says, so that takes care of ADS-B in. So as for ADS-B out, which concerns the ability of small UAVs to broadcast their position to other aircraft, we have a problem because the current ADS-B standard has some requirements that really can't be met with a small UAS. One of them being, for example, that the broadcast out has to be 130 watts. Well, you're not going to put a 130 watt transmitter of anything on your quadcopter for obvious reasons. So what Tim says is we need some kind of a low wattage, short range specification for small UAS. There's a lot more detail that we don't have time to go into right now, but we'll put a link in the show notes to Tim's article.
I guess that wraps it up, but we have a shout out to our new patrons, Neil and Greg. Max and I appreciate it. We're looking to grow, and we're excited. Tomorrow we're going to interview a guest I'm sure that everyone's going to enjoy, a major market player in the small UAV industry. So with that note, I guess we should talk about where they can find us, Max, like our website, which is theuavdigest.com.
That's right, and that'll contain show notes to this episode with a ton of links to the stories and items, topics that we talked about. If you want to go straight there, the shortcut is theuavdigest.com/56 for episode 56. You can also find us on Twitter at UAV Digest. Same for Facebook, UAV Digest. And of course, we have an email address, don't we, David?
The email address is feedback@theuavdigest.com. Or if you take the word feedback and replace it with either Max or David, it'll come directly to us. And of course, don't forget to leave feedback on iTunes so that we can continue being the number one UAV podcast on iTunes and Stitcher.com, where you can stream it directly to your phone. You want some swag, you know, show your UAV Digest love. There's our CafePress.com UAV Digest. And of course, if you'd like to help Max and I continue doing the show and provide us a little love, try going to the website, which is theuavdigest.com, and click the donate button and become a patron. So I guess with that, Max, I should say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
This episode has been sponsored by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com.